treaties were made with First Nations people all over this country as far back as 1701 and before. These were legal agreements by the British government and our own First Nations. The natives have lived alongside of us ever since the white man has stepped upon these shores. They are still a separate nation. They have never signed those rights away, and they don't wish to lose their culture. Just like you and I, they don't want their culture taken away from them. Nothing has changed, and the treaties are being ignored. Today on The Other Side, urban sprawl and land claim.
Freedom of the press is only guaranteed when you own the press.
It's time to hear the other side of the news.
Communication breakdown. Pause for the message. Wake up. Every station is a gentrification. Global syndication is the shaping of the nation. ABC, Disney, NBC, GE, Murdoch is Foxy, and with a hint, he owns a pen, the camera, the sword, buy a Coke, buy a Ford, getting broke, getting bored.
The other side of the news.
What we want, what we need, what we want, what we need. But do we even know who plans to see? You think the media works for you, but it's a job for them. They're just selling proof. Flim flam diagram, data jam, handicap, caught it. Yo, you bought it. A mind is a profitable thing to waste. You want another taste, baby? Got news goo.
What we need to know.
News goo.
What we want to know.
News goo.
What we think we know.
Got remote control to choose a show. The more we watch, the less we know. Ignorance grows on the spirit like a tumor. Till freedom is a rumor.
Well, we're really not interested in getting involved in a negotiation process that goes nowhere. All the agreement and principles, and I believe the last eight of them that have been made here in British Columbia, were defeated by the people at the community level. That means that the process is going nowhere, because the government is always coming back finally with the position of extinguishment, and the Indian people won't go for it. So
When you say extinguishment, what are you saying?
I'm calling it a very violent act. It means the snuffing out of Indian culture and language, because our language, culture, and that is directly linked to the land.
That, of course, was Anna Maria Tremonti with The Current on a show last Thursday, September the 9th, on the same problem we're having here in Hamilton, but this one was in BC. Urban sprawl has been demanding that local governments and provincial governments expand into these native rights areas. Sprawl is going to continue. The treaties are being ignored because the quest for money and the need for profits seem to be more important. But why does this need to continually expand supersede treaties and legal agreements? Just like you and I would not want our culture taken away from us by conquest or colonization, neither do the First Nations. We are a country of three nations, and for hundreds of years, we've constantly ignored those rights. On today's show, we have Elijah Harper as he makes a presentation to the federal government, and we also have in the studio with us Mr. Bob Hicks. And now, Elijah Harper.
First Nations people have a different view of the relationship with this country. It's one that's based on treaties. It's a unique relationship that exists between two groups of people, in this case, two nations of people. One that we consider that we made agreements with the Queen and her representatives in Canada. Those rights are enshrined in the Canadian Constitution, and they cannot be broken or legislated out. They exist as rights protected under the Canadian Constitution. Some of the treaties that we have with the federal government have not been totally spelled out. I know the treaties that we signed here in Canada. I've spoken with many of the elders that participated, heard of their parents or grandparents that participated in the treaty process, was that in return for the treaties, that the government would provide and secure benefit for them. And that relationship is to exist forever, as long as the rivers flow and the grass grows. And not many people understand that, including many of the leaders today running in the federal election, don't understand that. It sends shivers down my spine when we hear about Tom Flanagan being a senior advisor with Stephen Harper and also being a national campaign chair to ignore the treaty rights. The First Nations in this country. The very people that welcome the settlers to this country. And it is one of the reasons why the constitutional amendment was defeated, because it did not recognize the First Nations people in this country. And we were entrenching into the Canadian Constitution a myth that this country was founded by the French and the English. It wasn't built on truth. And be inclusive of everybody, which is the vision of our fathers when they signed the treaties, that we would share the land and the resources to the newcomers that came to this land. Because then when you share, it guaranteed security and benefits for our people. Unfortunately, the Canadian government has not honored those obligations. And there are many, I might say, outstanding claims in Canada, and there are many parts of Canada that are still negotiating claims, comprehensive claims in Canada. Self-government or governance of our territories has been here since time immemorial. And the very fact that we sign treaties is an expression of that right. There is no question of that right. When the Queen and her representatives signed the treaties they signed, they didn't question the authority of our people. It was signed nation to nation. And constantly, we have been bombarded with many things and trying to be set aside in this country, in a little corner, in reserves. Our contributions have been very great. You see this as I travel across the country, the rich country that we have. Ordinary Canadians are able to benefit from that. They have running water, nice homes, and electricity, paved roads. Yet when I go to many of the communities, isolated communities, even close by in urban centers, our people are living in poverty. And those are issues that I constantly raise, and it was one of the reasons why I ran for provincial legislature and also for the House of Commons. And oftentimes you get lost in a debate raising these issues. And when you go to the House of Commons, the Aboriginal issues seem to take a back seat. Our participation is not valued.
And that was an excerpt from Elijah Harper's speech to the federal government. And now we have Bob Hicks with us right here from Hamilton in our studio. Bob has been a member of OPIRC and very many other organizations over the years. He's been writing petitions about the Native Rights land claims for years. His petition 82 A, B, and C has been presented to the federal government several times. He is still waiting to hear back from the government about his petition, and he wonders why some of the points have not been brought up in Native meetings.
Hello, Maggie. Thank you for having me on your show today. It's a pleasure to be here. Yes, I am a member of the Board of Directors of Oak Ridge McMaster University. I was also a five-year member of the City of Burlington Sustainable Development Committee, and I was chair of that committee for 1 year. And I've been an activist and a concerned citizen for many years. And one of the things that you wanted me to talk about today on today's program is Petition 82C. What I would like the public to know is that the federal government has this wonderful petition system, if we use it and use it properly, that is available through the Auditor General of Canada's website. And I found out about it a year ago when I was sent a letter to the Auditor General complaining about the efforts and the situation that was taking place in the Red Hill Valley. I was concerned and upset that things were proceeding without all the proper approvals, and I thought that that was terribly wrong, so I wrote to the Auditor General of Canada to try and get some answers and some explanations as to how that could take place. So they responded to me. I think that's how I probably found out about the petition system, that perhaps I should submit a petition, which I did. And I sent three petitions, actually. And the system is a wonderful one in that the Auditor General of Canada's office takes it very seriously. And when you write an environmental petition through their office, they determine themselves which ministry is responsible for responding to those concerns and questions. And then they say that the minister of that particular ministry is must, they are compelled to provide a meaningful answer within 120 days to the petitioner. Well, in the case of Petition 82C, I never did get a response. It is now in the 8-year history of this petition system, which is really a shame that we haven't known about it more, because there hasn't been that many petitions submitted to it through the process. In the 8-year history, Petition 82C has the worst record of any petition for lateness of response. For reasons beyond our understanding, the Minister of Indian and Northern Affairs has not responded. He had 120 days, and it's now going on to close to a year. So we have to ask some very serious questions. What's going on here? Why is that the case? So I decided that this was totally unacceptable, of course, and I contacted them, and believe it or not, they told me that I should that they've had numerous communications over the last few months with the minister and been unable to get a response. And they said that perhaps I should take matters in my own hands and contact them directly, which, of course, was very upsetting to hear, because if the Auditor General of Canada can't get a response from a minister, how can I, as an average citizen, do that? So something is terribly, terribly wrong here. So I've sent another letter just a few days ago to express my extreme concern, even to the point where I consider this to be in contempt of Parliament, because when the Auditor General's Act was amended to add the petition system, that was an instruction from Parliament. And the Auditor General is responsible for making, and the Commissioner of Sustainable Development is responsible for ensuring that that system works and works properly. And if a minister does not respond, then they're preventing the Auditor General and the Commissioner of Sustainable Development from achieving the objectives as set out for them by Parliament. So this is a very serious matter that the Minister of Indian and Northern Affairs has not responded to this petition. It also went to the Minister of Heritage, of course, and I did get a response from them. And they said that they thought that that they were unable to participate because they thought it was under the jurisdiction of the provincial government, which, of course, is not a good response. It's like a cop-out response, because if you go back to the history of negotiations, we must understand that the Aboriginal people are a separate nation, and they share this nation with us. And these treaties go back a long way. And the federal government are the people who are supposed to be negotiating with them on matters. And sure, if they want to have agreements where the municipal governments and the provincial governments also get involved and participate and have discussions with and with Aboriginal peoples, that's fine. But the main focus and the main responsibility and obligation is that of the federal government and the federal ministers. And so to say that it's beyond their scope is absolutely outrageous. How can their obligations evaporate simply by saying that it's the responsibility of the provincial government? It's totally unacceptable.
As I understand it, you did get a response to petition A and B, but C is the one they keep ignoring, correct?
Well, yeah, they responded to me saying that they cannot speculate as to the reason for the delay, but I can speculate. And my speculation is that after all this time, something is terribly wrong, and you have to ask yourself what would be the motivations for holding up and not responding to this, to make it an insult to the environmental petition system, and actually also an insult to Native rights and the commitments that the governments have made for many years about Native rights. I mean, something has got to be dramatically wrong here, either within the Ministry of Indian and Northern Affairs or somebody is putting pressure on and trying to intimidate them to not address it and not respond. And perhaps it's because to respond to the difficult questions that were put forth in Petition 82C, it may have caused reasons for delaying the construction. And maybe in the last few months or the last 5 months, the things that have occurred in the valley would not have occurred if the minister had given it its appropriate consideration at the appropriate time.
Do you want to just get into the petition 82C just a little bit and let us know what was in it, what the wording was?
In 82C, I said in relationship to the Red Hill Expressway project that the project also impacts on numerous Aboriginal burial sites found in the valley. The burial sites are a great concern of Aboriginal peoples, and they will also be greatly concerned about the ecological principles that are embedded in their culture and spirituality. The Red Hill Valley is not just a local Hamilton issue. 10 years ago, the Haudenosaunee Environmental Task Force was formed, and it was on behalf of that particular body that actions were first taken to protect the Red Hill Valley. I understand that Aboriginal title may be infringed on by either provincial or federal governments if the infringement satisfies a compelling legislative objective, including, for example, the building of infrastructure. However, I also understand that if there is to be an infringement on Aboriginal title, the government must recognize its fiduciary relationship with Aboriginal people and ensure that there is as little infringement as possible, that fair compensation is made available, and that Aboriginal groups have been consulted. Therefore, I wish to be advised the following. Who has determined that the Red Hill Expressway is a compelling legislative objective? How is a compelling legislative objective defined? And what authority did this person or persons have to make this determination? Next question. If it has been determined that the Red Hill Expressway is a compelling legislative objective, what fair compensation has been considered or made available? What has been done to ensure that the Aboriginal people concerned have been consulted as appropriate considering the above comments? And what steps are being taken to ensure that Justice Larmer's legal definition of Aboriginal title has been given appropriate consideration and treatment in this case? It appears to me that since the City of Hamilton has initiated discussions with Six Nations Band Council, currently headed by Roberta Jameson, that Indian Affairs and the Minister of Heritage have an important role to play and need to be involved in those discussions. Therefore, I wish to be advised the following. Am I correct that Indian Affairs and the Minister of Heritage should participate? If so, it would be appropriate for them to be involved in the early stage of discussions to provide whatever assistance they can. I also said that in my view, it would be inappropriate for the City of Hamilton to receive any financial support for the Red Hill Valley Creek project from higher levels of government until the concerns and rights of Aboriginal people have been appropriately addressed. In my view, any commitment or spending of large sums of taxpayers' dollars on a project from any level of government for either planning or construction activities before all appropriate matters related to Aboriginal title are addressed could jeopardize the fair and just treatment of Aboriginal title and other Aboriginal rights. Over the years, many rules and regulations have been put into place to protect the environment and Aboriginal rights, and to ensure that the goals of sustainable development are taken seriously. These goals are now well established throughout Canada and are shared by the federal government, 10 provincial governments, 3 territorial governments, and local governments, plus Aboriginal communities. So I think it's a very fair question to say, what is the problem here? Why is it that the Ministry of Indian and Northern Affairs have taken so long to respond to this? Was it that because when they tried to respond that they found out that things had been done that should not have been done in the proper manner. And should it, and could it be that these, they thought that if they brought it up, they would it would cause problems for the construction. We also have to ask ourselves, in April of this year, there was a roundtable held in Toronto at which the Right Honorable Paul Martin, Prime Minister, attended, and it was hosted, he hosted it, and the Canadian Aboriginal peoples attended that, and over 40 members of federal cabinet, the Senate and the House of Commons, and 70 Aboriginal leaders from across the country. Why was Petition 82C not even brought up on the agenda? Why could some discussion about Petition 82C, or even an acknowledgement of its existence, have not been put on the agenda of not only the April 19th meeting, but also the meetings that followed that meeting? Perhaps Petition 82C has been hidden all this time behind closed doors and closed lips because people did not want to have it openly discussed. But if that is the case, that can be classified as an intentional withholding and a cover-up. Am I wrong to think that this is an outrageous scandal that INAC and others should be made to answer to, and to the Auditor General of Canada?
I want to thank you, Bob, for coming into the studio this afternoon and talking to us about your petition. We'll find out more about this if we'll have Bob back into the studio. Thanks, Bob.
Well, thank you, Maggie. It was a pleasure talking to you, and if you ever want me to come back again, it would be a pleasure to come back also.
It's not just the treaty rights in Hamilton that are being ignored. It's all across the country, from Nova Scotia to Montreal, and this report from Kamloops, BC, was brought to us by Working TV.
All territory was forsaken. And then they just, what they done to it, they coached everything and doing, stopping the waters and using the waters for their own purpose, and there were nothing for us. And that hurts.
Sarah Denault is an elder of the Shwebnik First Nation in BC's southern interior near Kamloops. The Shwebnik have lived on their land for thousands of years, and have never ceded, surrendered, or released it in any way. But the BC government has allowed continued expansion of the posh ski resort at Sun Peaks on Shwebnik territory, including a recent $250 million project. For years, the Shwebnik have clearly said no to expansion at Sun Peaks, and have resisted with protests and blockades. The government has responded with the forcible removal of Shwebnik from their traditional territory, with 54 arrests, and with the destruction of Shwebnik dwellings and sacred sweat lodges. On August 28th and 29th, the Shwebnik hosted a convergence at Sun Peaks. Nearly 200 people came from the Lower Mainland and from as far east as Montreal to support the Shwebnik in their struggle.
I'm here today to support the people who are willing to risk their personal freedom into standing up for what the courts are ruling that belongs to them, and that the Constitution under Section 35 belongs to these Shuswap people.
We're just here to show our support, show our solidarity with the native fighters up here fighting against the same sort of occupation that we've been opposing in Palestine and Iraq, the denial of self-determination.
To protest against what they're doing up here with the ski hills.
The activists here believe that inherent title and rights is the vehicle for protecting the land, air, and water, and we agree that that's a common ground for both our peoples to come together to protect the commons for future generations, and that's why we're here supporting.
I'm going to stand up for what King George signed in 1763, saying that all crown land will be held in trust for the Aboriginal people. Reconfirmed again in 1982 in the Constitution under Section 35, that Aboriginal title exists, and reconfirmed by 7 Supreme Court judges of Canada in the Delgamuukw decision, ruling that Aboriginal title is an existing proprietary interest in the land, and it also carries with it an economic...
One nation that holds interest, that holds title to this land, and that would be the Tsleil-Waututh Nation, that's as defined on this map on my shirt, and under the December 11th, 1997 Supreme Court ruling that the collective nation encompasses all 17 communities, and until Sun Peaks has an agreement with all 17 communities as to the use of our land than any other colonially structured legislative response to that is null and void, is the position that we take. And I don't want you coming in here shooting at me or any of our guests here, and I think that any deadly show of force like that would be totally inconsistent with your stated position on numerous documented occasions. So that's one thing that I would like to know.
I guess our only concern is from reports that we've received, is there have been reports of what reported the gunshots.
They came from over there that night.
Did they? Okay.
Yeah, that was Saturday night. So I don't think that you want to be blaming that on us.
We're certainly not looking at losing human life out of this. We're trying to resolve the issue, and that's first and foremost in our mind, is to get this matter settled.
And that was RCMP spokesman Bob Callahan speaking with a Native representative, Arnie Jack.
Differently, Mr. Vidan.
Well, Arthur and also Christopher talked about the division. I think that's a tactic that the federal government, the provincial government has used over the decades, if not centuries, in terms of not dealing with land claims and factionalizing people within reserve communities. You've got to recognize that the reserve communities are very poverty-stricken themselves, so it's people who are in desperate straits and have been for generations. You know, the people that Christopher talks about who will be purchasing the lots, they represent the very wealthy, if not the elite in Canada. It was only a few years ago that Canada was the best place in the world to live, when Aboriginal people in urban areas were the 35th, and people on Aboriginal reserves were ranked as 63rd. Again, my concern is, particularly with the young people who have a sense of being marginalized. They're aware of the history that Arnie Jack talked about, the inherent right, which was derived from 1763. It wasn't created, it was recognized, the Delgamuc decision, and the provincial government and the federal government and the local governments have proceeded as if those decisions are not in place. There is a reserve which was established in 1862 between Governor James Douglas and Chief Nisqually. That has not been included. Arthur can speak towards that better than I can.
One of the things is that the federal policy is based on extinguishment. Yesterday, here in Kelowna, Chief Mike Rataskett from the Bonaparte Indian Band, who is a Sowapmuk chief, delivered a message to the Minister of Indian Affairs. It was written by Janice Billy, and it was supported by a document that I had with respect to the injunction. And basically we're saying is that, that the utilization of the police to resolve undisputed land issues is wrong, that basically the extinguishment policy has to be looked at. Also, the minister was presented with a legal study done by Mark Stevenson and Albert Peeling, two indigenous lawyers who are very familiar with this issue, that say that the existing federal policy is inconsistent with the Supreme Court of Canada decisions. All the agreement and principles, and I believe the last eight of them that have been made here in British Columbia, were defeated by the people at the community level. That means that the process is going nowhere, because the government is always coming back finally with the position of extinguishment, and the Indian people won't go for it. It means the snuffing out of Indian culture and language, because our language, culture, and that is directly linked to the land. There has to be room to negotiate on the basis of why injunctions are given, because in this case, the injunctions is given to give Frank Quinn and Darcy Alexander, the people from Sun Peaks, the right to build 60 condominiums and 48 townhouses. But they don't take into consideration the indigenous economies, in terms of our traditional land values and activities, The Indian people won't go for it. It means the snuffing out of Indian culture and language, because our language, culture, and that is directly linked to the land. There has to be room to negotiate on the basis of why injunctions are given, because in this case, the injunctions is given to give Frank Quinn and Darcy Alexander, the people from Sun Peaks, the right to build 60 condominiums and 48 townhouses. But they don't take into consideration the indigenous economies, in terms of our traditional land values and activities, culture and language. on the basis of why injunctions are given, because in this case, the injunctions is given to give Frank Quinn and Darcy Alexander, the people from Sun Peaks, the right to build 60 condominiums and 48 townhouses. But they don't take into consideration the indigenous economies, you know, in terms of our traditional land values and activities, you know. And the Indian people won't go for it. So it means the snuffing out of Indian culture and language, because our language, culture, and that is directly linked to the land. There has to be room to negotiate on the basis of why injunctions are given, because in this case, the injunctions is given to give Frank Quinn and Darcy Alexander, the people from Sun Peaks, the right to build 60 condominiums and 48 townhouses. But they don't take into consideration the indigenous economies, you know, in terms of our traditional land values and activities, you know.